There is the type who always believes that after being entirely free from alcohol for a period of time, he can take a drink without any danger. If I just stop drinking for a while, then I can go back and do it. Some of us think that here. I just stopped drinking for a while. I can go back. It'll be okay. I won't drink on the weekdays. I'll just wait for the weekend. That's all I got to do. On the weekend, then, it'll be different. I'll be fine. We make a lot of New Year's resolutions. I used to do a bunch of those. And it's just to believe that being entirely free from the alcohol for a period of time, as though that whole period of time cleans me up or something. Like it gets rid of this allergy of the body, you know? As though I'm going to start all over again. Fresh. Some people believe that even in recovery. I used to hear that you start off right where you left off. That's how the allergy, like laying dormant or something. I also heard people say that you start off, where you start off is as though you never left. Oh, that's scary to me. That means 18 years later, I'm going to take a drink. 18 plus years, I go out now, it's as though I never left 18 plus years ago. Woohoo! That's spooky. You know what I was doing 18 plus years ago? And it has gotten progressively worse, as though I never left? That would not be cute. And it does not sound fun. There is the manic depressive type who is perhaps the least understood by his friends and with whom a whole chapter could be written. What's funny about that when we start looking for the chapter, because most of us are like, where's that chapter? They don't have the chapter.
What does he mean with being least understood by friends?
Because we're manic depressive. We're like always depressed. We put on like Billie Holiday and all these songs and we crying and the world is terrible. We're just miserable. Nobody gets us. Like, oh my God. Just, you're going to be all right. Everything is horrible. The manic depressive, everything. The world is coming to an end at any moment. And I'm drinking about it too. Nobody loves me. You don't love me. I don't deserve to be here. Why am I here? I hate you. You hate me. People be like, oh, jeez. And you can have so many things going on in your life. You can have so much around you. People who love you. You can have outside things, material things, but you're still miserable. And people don't get it. Calling your boyfriend in the middle of the night, crying on the phone. Your ex-boyfriends and stuff. Y'all don't do that here? Everybody look at me like, that's unusual. You don't be making those phone calls in the middle of the night? After a few drinks? Well, maybe it's just me. I guess I need to be here. Then there are the types entirely normal in every respect, except in the effect alcohol has upon them. They are often able, intelligent, and friendly people. They give me different types to choose from, or maybe I'm a bit of everything. Doesn't leave a whole lot of room for me to keep making excuses, eh? I'm normal in every respect. I'm going to work. I have my family. Everything is together. Everything seems put together. Everything's clean. Everything is great. I take a drink and uh-oh. Something happens. Normal in every respect. Again, I go back to the DUI classes. In the English classes, nobody's an alcoholic. Nobody. In the Spanish classes, everybody's an alcoholic. And they go, and what's your point? Can't necessarily approach them the same way. In the Latino community, they all know they're alcoholic. And they don't get the point. They're like, I go to work every day. I put food on the table, money on the table. My kids have a roof over their head and clothes on their back. That's my vacation. Why are you bothering me? I am a man. And I take care of my family. And I can drink as much as I want. I pay the bills. That's it. And most of them, in every respect, make sure that that's taken care of. That I do take care of my family. As long as I keep that in order, then I should be okay. That's the hardest alcoholic to come into the rooms and get sober.
Yeah.
It's harder that way. They call them functioning alcoholics. Where do I say I'm unmanageable in that? How do I say that? I'm managing other areas of my life. My life seems to be in order. Just because I go out and act a little silly and drink too much and stay at the party too long, why is that a problem? Oh, that's so difficult. They're like, I don't know. You tell me why that's a problem. If it wasn't a problem, why do you wake up with remorse? If you have it all together, what you tripping on then? Why do you feel so bad on the inside? Why do you feel so lonely and empty? Why do you get uncomfortable after work that you need to stop by the bar then? If it ain't such a big deal. Something's going on. Why does, even though your wife and your children are being taken care of, they look at you the way they do? Don't you think they should be happy since everything is being taken care of, right? What's going on? Why do you think you need to be here and you need help if your life is such an order? You just drank a little bit too much? You got to be kidding me. That's what always gets me about people in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. We were talking about high bottoms, low bottoms. I'm like, we all just have a bottom. Doesn't matter to me if your life was in order. That doesn't interest me in any way. We're great at putting up a facade. The bottom is on the inside. The darkness is on the inside. It's what's happening to me within me. Not so much what's going on outside of me. Some people listen to my story and say, oh, how tragic. I'm not a movie. I'm an alcoholic. The tragedy of my story has nothing to do with anything. It has to do with what was going on the inside. I could have still kept living like that and thought it was perfectly fine. It's what started happening here that made it difficult. And the same thing that was happening to me on the inside, despite the abuse and all the horrific, you know, stuff that I'm talking about, is the same thing that's happening to the person who has a job, who has a family, who have their life together. We both feel the same way. We feel dirty and ugly and lonely and lost. That's what binds us together. That's what brings a group together that doesn't normally mix. Has nothing to do if you have a job and I don't. Nothing. You have a car, I don't. That's not what we're here to talk about. How do we feel when we say not today and we do it anyway? How do we feel that whatever we find to be demoralizing in our own life, so for somebody it could just be they didn't bring home the check that night. And for me, it could have been selling my body. It doesn't matter. It's how we both felt when you didn't bring the check and I sold my body. I felt horrible because I didn't want to do that. I wanted to bring the check home and I didn't want to sell my body. So you can look at me and go, oh my God, she sold her body. How horrible. You didn't bring a check home. Do you know what I'm saying? My story ain't worse than yours. You felt bad not bringing the check home. And I felt bad. We just felt bad. And why do we feel bad when we want to do better? Because we can't. That's where I'm powerless. And my life is unmanageable. Is that a hard pill to swallow? Absolutely. Who wants to admit complete defeat? Not me. Not me. So if you be new or you be old and you're struggling and you're fighting the fact that you don't want to admit defeat, you're not alone. None of us do. You ain't talking about nothing. Which type am I? Any questions so far? We on questions. I like questions. Yes.
So do you speak about, excuse me, like that my emotional life is unmanageable. With some of these people who have everything on the outside, that's the way you understand that my life is unmanageable.
Emotional life.
My inner life, my emotional life.
Yep. What's your experience?
No, that is my experience. Well, I have both, because my outer life was also a mess. and unmanageable, but much, much more so on the inside.
What was happening?
Just complete chaos, not being able to understand anything about how anything worked on the outside, with other people, relations, and, you know, how this planet functions, basically. And how to relate to everything.
Yeah. And when you drank, what would happen?
Oh, complete relief. Party.
And then when the party was over?
Yeah, it was always over. Very short. Yeah.
It must be... It must. It would be scary for me because I don't want the party to end. Then,
no.
I don't want the party to end. No. That's why I'm going. Where's everybody going? I know it's Sunday.
Yeah.
But if the party ends, then I'm going to be feeling terrible again. I become restless, irritable, and discontent, and I don't want to do that. That's why I'm willing to go to any lengths to get the next one. I need the ease and comfort. Because I feel bad. I like the effect. We get too caught up in thinking that I get to determine if I'm an alcoholic based on my outsides. That's not what's really unmanageable. Those are the consequences of what's going on the inside. Somebody had a hand up back there. Didn't I see a hand up? No? No? Yeah? No? Any more questions? Yeah.
Well, I actually have a question on the text because this was one... place in the book where I really, you know, finding the places that I didn't recognize myself or, you know, couldn't relate to, of course, in the beginning of my sobriety and studying this text. It was, you know, why he writes, the doctor, it is, he writes, men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. Why doesn't he say, you know, these men and women or alcoholic men and women? Because he says it as just that sentence, which starts in a new, you know, to me, it sounds like this is for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I see the world, because I can't imagine, I just can't even relate to the idea of not drinking because of that. So I think that everybody drinks like that. I was just always like, why is he saying men and women in such a way that it sounds like it's absolutely everybody, not the alcoholic?
So it sounds, he's putting it as like, basically men and women just drink because they like the effect. I can see that.
Yeah.
I know I like the effect, but I've seen other men and women who don't drink for the effect.
Yeah.
And there's some men and women, I mean, alcohol, they call it spirits, right? It does something.
Yeah.
There's some people who had a hard day at work and they like to take the edge off by having, so that's an effect, where they kind of just have a drink and relax. Helps them to relax and take it easy. That's happened. I want to get tipsy. I want to get loaded. I do. I want to feel nice. I don't want to be here. I don't drink and want to be present for the experience. I'm looking to check out. I'm looking to disappear. Mm-hmm. When I drink, I essentially am drinking because something needs to happen to me. That's why if it doesn't, I get mad. Don't give me a pill that don't work. No. Don't pass me a drink that doesn't get me nice. Please don't do that to me. That's very upsetting. It's very disturbing. If I drink and I don't feel it, I get really angry. You ever heard the thing that they say if an alcoholic dies, you take their brain, put it in a jar of alcohol, you're here. That sigh of relief. Finally. We wonder why we get sober and we get like this, because we try to find that relief. You had your hand up.
I always think of like this, the difference between me and the person who isn't an alcoholic but still likes the effect is that I want that effect no matter what. I drank while breastfeeding because I like the effect of alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
I drank while I was pregnant because I like the effect. I need it. It was the love of my life. I couldn't live without it. I know a lot of people that can have one glass of wine and they like the effect, but they don't drink no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
They don't drink no matter what it costs them. They don't miss their kids' graduations. They don't lose their jobs because they like the effect. because it isn't that, it doesn't taste that good, you know? So I think for me that's the difference. I have friends that like, you know, that small buzz or but they don't take that second or the third or the tenth glass, or they don't go on a week-long drinking, you know, partying like I did.
What's interesting is that I may like the effect. I take the drink to get that effect. But what happens to me that's different from the person who maybe likes that buzz is I have the allergy of the body. So now the buzz came and left and I'm still there. I got the buzz. It's not even about a buzz anymore. The buzz is over. I'm still drinking. I'm not feeling no buzz. I'm not feeling nothing. My head's pounding. I'm sick to my stomach. But I'm still drinking. I'm still doing it. The effect has been gone. It's been gone. And I'm chasing that effect again. I'm chasing, constantly chasing. I want the effect. I want the effect. And then the allergy is doing something else altogether different. Oh, what a vicious cycle. It's called alcoholic torture. Yeah. But I keep doing it, and I keep doing it, 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 I keep doing it. Never ending, never ending, never ending. That's my experience. Find yours. I always say, within the pages, they told me. Which type am I? Is that me? Did that happen to me? Was that my experience? If what they're talking about, is that true? Do I identify with that? If I do, then perhaps maybe I'm an alcoholic. Oh, what a concept. Oh, how scary that is. But for some reason, these people, these thousands of men and women that have recovered, in their experience, they have found that to be true. And as a result of them admitting their powerlessness and unmanageability, they have found a new way of life. Isn't that something? Is there freedom in that? Is it the possibility that if I admit such a thing, if I get honest with myself for the first time in my life, that just maybe this is true based on my experience, then could it be that there's hope for me? Because I don't know about you, but I never did that one before. I never admitted that I was powerless over alcohol and that my life was unmanageable. I never got honest enough to see that no matter how hard I tried, I just couldn't do it. I never did that one. I did everything else but that. I found that fascinating. That these people admitted this, they got honest about it, and all of a sudden, they recovered. They no longer had to do what I've been doing. Swearing off forever. They weren't doing that anymore. They weren't doing this vicious cycle anymore. They weren't waking up with remorse like I had been. All they did was admit that I'm powerless. That I have this allergy, this phenomenon of craving. There's something going on that's beyond me that as much as I want it to be different, it ain't. That's all they did. Something else is going on here beyond me. I never thought of that. Never. What a relief. Is it possible that no matter what combination I'm finding, I'm not going to find the right one? I don't have the key to this, but maybe these people do. That's how I saw it. And you know what? It couldn't hurt, you know. I can always go back to what I used to do before. Some part of me always knew that. The door is never locked. I can always go back to that. It will be waiting for me. Has gone nowhere. I can go back to the same bar and the same bar stool. I'm sure it'll be right there. That same cheap leather chair and bar stool, dirty, nasty rugs, dim light place is still there. And if that's not there, there's another one just like it. I can always go back to my lonely life. How many people have been in and out of the rooms? They go there for me. So let me take a look and say, am I alcoholic? Can I admit that? Can I admit that I have this allergy and this phenomenon of craving and that the only thing that's going to help me is a psychic change? A spiritual experience? And that I'm one of these types? Later on, they talk about Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. The insanity, I do the same things over and over and over again and it never changes. Am I like the jaywalker that starts talking about later on and more about alcoholism? The person who goes out into the cars and kept crossing the streets without looking, kept crossing the street without looking, kept getting hit and kept saying, I'm not going to do it, turn around and did it again. Am I that guy? Do I want to admit that? Maybe not, but I have to. I have to if I want the possibility of something finally being different. Haven't I not been praying for it, even to a God that I don't believe in? How many times I asked in some small way, in some weird kind of prayer, for it to be different? How many times did I do that? And now something is different, and I'm scared. I have a disease that tells me don't listen to those people. You can manage and control. Sure, you haven't been able to do it for the last 20 years. But we can figure it out together. Ooh, I love alcoholism. That's why they told me not to listen to my head, because my disease was centered in my thinking, which is the obsession of the mind. It begins with the obsession. My head tells me it's going to be different this time. Even though it hasn't been all these years, this time it is going to be different. Really, it will. It's going to be. We had a couple of times when it was different. Do you remember that time? And I don't know how many times I told you not to hang out there. You need to move to a whole other country. I told you that job is killing you. It's that job. The job gets you every time, and you keep going back there. It starts and it really begins with the obsession. And when we get sober, that obsession starts doing double time. It starts doing push-ups. I remember the speaker used to have him cracking up. He said he would stand. It seemed like when he went to sleep, he woke up, his disease was waiting for him at the headboard, looking down at him and going, are you up yet? All right, look, like what I was talking about last night. I'm waiting for you to get up. Check this out. This is what we're going to do today. Admitting we were powerless over alcohol and our lives have become unmanageable. I got a couple of minutes. We're gonna go to lunch, yeah? Okay. Let me do this one. And step one, I wanna read this to you. Who cares to admit complete defeat? Practically no one, of course. Every natural instinct cries out against the idea of personal powerlessness. It is truly awful to admit that, glass in hand, we have warped our minds to such an obsession for destructive drinking that only an act of providence can remove it from us. No other kind of bankruptcy is like this one. Alcohol now becomes this repetitious creditor, bleeds us of all self-sufficiency and all will to resist its demands. Once this stark fact is accepted, our bankruptcy as going human concerns is complete. But upon entering AA, we soon take quite another view of this absolute humiliation. We perceive that only through utter defeat are we able to take our first steps towards liberation and strength. Our admission of personal powerlessness finally turns out to be the firm bedrock upon which happy and purposeful lives can be built. We know that little good can come to any alcoholic who joins AA unless he has first accepted his devastating weakness and all of its consequences. Until he so humbles himself, his sobriety, if any, will be quite precarious. Of real happiness, he will find none at all. That's like a promise, yo. I don't know, man. These people were getting me. I was like, ooh. They scared me. I was like, oh, my God. Proven beyond doubt by any immense experience, this is one of the facts of AA's life. The principle that we shall find no enduring strength until we first admit complete defeat is the main taproot from which our whole society has sprung and flowered. Oh, I love that. Then towards the end, it's on the 12 and 12. Why all this insistence of every AA must hit bottom first? The answer is that few people will sincerely try to practice the AA program unless they hit bottom. For practicing AA's remaining 11 steps means the adoption of attitudes and actions that almost no alcoholic who is still drinking can dream of taking. Who wishes to be vigorously honest and tolerant? Not me. Who wants to confess his faults to another and make restitution for harm done? Oh, no. Who cares anything about a higher power? I know, not me. I'm my higher power. Let alone meditation and prayer? Yucky. Who wants to sacrifice time and energy in trying to carry AA's message to the next sufferer? I just think about that. I want to get on no plane and go to Sweden. I'm sorry. You may love your country, but I've never been here. I don't want to get on no plane. That was 12 hours. That's a lot of hours. That's a long time. I couldn't smoke a cigarette. I wasn't in first class. I didn't have a bed. It's a long time. It's cold. At all times, I come out here in January. I like sunny California. I walk around with a little skirt, a little tank top, and flip-flops. No. The average alcoholic, self-centered in the extreme, doesn't care for this prospect. Unless he has to do these things in order to stay alive himself. That's why I got on a plane. That's why I found some hat and some gloves and some boots. And got out here. And somebody gave me Nicorettes or something for the plane, and I got munchies and some twisty things. Why? Because I need to do these things in order to stay alive. To stay alive. It doesn't say just to not drink. To stay alive. Under the lash of alcoholism, we are driven to AA. It says, under the lash of alcoholism. We are driven to AA. People think we just stop by here for a cute little moment. We are driven into AA. People talk about these horrific stories and people don't have bad stories. I'm like, if you in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, you got a bad story. Because we're driven to AA. Unless you got the nudge from the judge. Or you're doing it because of your family. And we plant the seed and you keep coming back. You're welcome too. But the ones who come here are driven. It says driven into AA. You run up in here. Things must have been really bad. You don't come here because you had a couple of too many martinis. I'm sorry. That cracks me up. No, I just drank a little too much, so I went to AA. Please. Then you ain't no real alcoholic. You just tripping for the moment. A real alcoholic has to be driven. It just described to me why. I have this obsession of mine, this allergy of the body. I'm doing it despite the consequences. I'm burning bridges. I have remorse. Problems are happening in my life. I can't manage and control what's going on around me. I feel bad. I feel horrible. I do these nasty things. I don't have good intentions. My intentions are well, but they turn around worse. You're driven in AA. I'm sorry. I had too many drinks. I went to AA. I go, you're doing a term paper. Real alcoholics have to be driven up in here. We're survivors, man. We push stuff to the end, boy. Do you know what I'm saying? You could cut me up in a million pieces. I'll find another arm. I'll limp over to everyone. Get my drink. Shoot. Be like Flipper. I don't care. Oh, Lord. I got to finish. And there we discover the fatal nature of our situation. We're driven into AA, and what's so interesting, it says we discover when I get here. There we discover the true nature. So that's why when you're new, we tell you, you don't know nothing. People are so sensitive. You don't know anything because you don't know the true nature. You were just driven up in here. You're clueless. You can't tell the truth from the false. You can't differentiate. Your lenses are crooked. Your mind is warped. You can't figure this out. You think your life is a normal one. You only discover your true nature when you get here. That's why it cracks my people who know, well, basically, I think my drinking has something. Oh, be quiet. You don't know. You are clueless. Then and only then do we become as open-minded to conviction and as willing to listen as the dying can be. We stand ready to do anything which will lift the merciless obsession from us. I'm willing to do anything to lift the obsession. It's the obsession and the allergy of the body that's killing me. And later we're going to find we put the plug in the jug and I suffer from a spiritual malady. The remaining steps, if you realize, they don't talk about alcohol no more. Do you notice that? They only mention alcohol in the first step. After that, we start talking about something else altogether. Oh, I thought my problem was just drinking. Oh, shucks. We're going to have fun after lunch on that one. Jeez, I just thought I had to just stop drinking. Oh, no. We're going to talk about the restless irritability and discontentment. So that if that's addressed, I don't need to seek the ease and comfort that comes from the first few drinks. Ah. Isn't that something? I was impressed with people in AA. Not only were they sober, they weren't killing themselves or somebody else. That's what impressed me. Oh, you're not killing yourself or somebody else? That's impressive. Because when I'm not drinking, I want to kill somebody else and myself. That means y'all got something going on here. I love it. I hope that's helpful. Real quick, before we go, we're going to do seven tradition. But any questions? I went too fast. Trying to do it in a day, you know. But is everybody okay? Think about it. When we come back, please ask me. This is for you. Hope that you understand in the way you need to. Or speak amongst each other. I don't know how you do in crowds, but hopefully you can get it. So we're doing the seven tradition, yes, Amanda? Thank you.